Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of Zeit Rider.
Ooh.
There it is.
Yeah, you know.
When in doubt, I can always count on Miles Gray.
The only child who didn't have headphones.
Why were we talking about Knight Rider recently?
Because we were talking about if ACAB includes Knight Rider, I think.
Okay.
Does and then it? We're like, yeah, because like a billionaire like made the cop, like the cop got shot, and then the billionaire him this like
cop
car.
Got shot
and
in
like,
the face.
Yeah, and then the, and
also
guy,
there
the
was
billionaire
like a weird
made the
vanity
fancy car.
To it because Michael Knight like got to choose how handsome he was, and he chose to look like David Hasselhoff, like because that was like a self sculpted face. Like the fact that it was a billionaire, now knowing what we know about billionaires, like you can't trust it. He probably had that cop shot and then had his face designed to look like someone that he thought was handsome.
Okay.
I'm just kind of putting it all together now.
Yeah.
Anyways, my name's Jack O'Brien. That's Miles Gray. This is the episode where we tell you what is trending.
Yeah.
And we actually have a very special trending episode. Because one of the things that is trending, of course, is the student protests happening across the country that started at Columbia University, or at least like a big portion of the coverage has started at Columbia University. And we are thrilled to be joined by a former producer of this show.
Yes.
Currently in grad school for journalism at Columbia University. She's been doing some reporting on the student protests. Please welcome back to the show, Trisha Mukherjee!
Trisha! Welcome back, Trisha!
Thanks for having me back. It's so fun to be back here with you guys.
Great to
it's
have
been
you
so
back.
Long.
I know.
And look at like, and suddenly when like super producer Anna was like, y'all, Trisha's at Columbia and she's like up in it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like we should talk to her. I'm like, because when you look at the coverage of the student protests, depending on where you get your news, it could be either a peaceful protest or it could be a thing that's rife with anti-Semitism, or it could be so violent, but it may be the cop. Like, again, I think with everything surrounding the situation in Gaza, like there's just so many realities people are experiencing, or at least different realities are being represented and presented to them. But for you being on the ground and it's happening at the university you're currently attending, can you just like give us an idea just sort of like how it all started? Because I think a lot of people will just say like these kids are like Hamas sympathizers who have lost the plot, or they're people who don't know what they're doing and it's like a fad. Can you just tell us, like, how, like, point A to now where we're at, like, the escalation is clear now that students have, like, barricaded themselves into a building. Like, it's like, this is not going away in any kind of normal way, but how did it all, like, walk us through this for a second,
please. Yeah. So I think that this has been a conversation on campus for a long time, like long before October 7th and long before the last 2 weeks. It's just that in the last 2 weeks, the whole country's attention has zoomed in on the section of like two or three blocks. Mm-hmm. But people have been protesting for Palestine long before that as well. So I'll start just a little bit further back. On October 7th, there were big protests on campus, both from the pro-Israel side and from the pro-Palestine side. And each group was in its own separate area and kind of chanting and being together. There was a lot of pain in the air. But since then, there have been several pro-Palestine protests. There's been a huge amount of, I think, like discrimination and kind of danger to those student protesters. Right from the very beginning, around October 7th, there were these trucks that would constantly circle around campus with the faces of those students and their names and their personal contact information and their addresses. And those are being circulated everywhere, essentially to encourage people to dox and threaten these pro-Palestine protesters.
Did you say trucks would circulate?
Yeah.
Like what? At Harvard, we saw them at Harvard. I remember seeing the ones that was happening at Harvard where they were like full-on LCD screens that were basically like video billboards doxing people.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's like this black truck, like who knows who owns it, but the sides are just these massive screens where they like play propaganda, and I assume
I'm assuming Iran owns it, right? Iran is funding most of this, exactly. Most of what's happening at Columbia, according to some mainstream media. Who is being doxxed? Who is being kind of threatened in this way? Is it students on both sides, on the pro-Israel and the pro-Palestine side?
In my experience and understanding from the students that I've talked to, it's really been targeted at pro-Palestine protesters and pro-Palestine students who have been protesting since October 7th. And I should say completely peacefully. They've been gathering on the steps and like waving flags and stuff. But so those people were targeted, and the university took no real actionable steps to address that their students were being threatened with really violent things. And then it, you know, people kept protesting. And then there was an attack a few months ago where several people who were former IDF soldiers used a chemical weapon to attack pro-Palestinian protesters on campus. And several of those students had to go to the hospital for several days because they were extremely nauseous, they couldn't breathe right, they felt extremely lightheaded. Mm-hmm. And to think that there was a literal chemical weapon attack against pro-Palestinian students on campus, or for that matter, any students on campus, it just... like, and that's something that wasn't covered by media.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the skunk attack that I feel like I remember reading about. And like, I remember there's one version that was like, it was some kind of chemical irritant. And then like in Haaretz, there were people saying that it was just a non-toxic fart spray that the person purchased on Amazon. So you're like, what's happening? Like what, like, so is... what like, so this year we're talking about people who actually were injured. This is like back in January, and are still like recovering from that.
Yeah, I think there's like students have said that there's long-term effects of something like that. And I know that there was, I don't want to say an exact number and have that be wrong, but there were several students who were hospitalized for several days as they were trying to be stabilized. So it wasn't just some joke kind of spray that you can buy at the dollar store. This is something that's really dangerous. And I also wanted to say that the Columbia administration has been sending emails since October 7th to the whole school, basically condemning anti-Semitism, but not addressing any of the attacks or doxing or the other things that has been happening to Arab and Muslim and Palestinian students. And so I think a lot of that is because of outside influences. The Colombia president recently testified in front of Congress, and we have a lot of donors who are very insistent about how the school should act. But it's just, it seems like a lot of the media coverage and the school has been very, like, has just been ignoring how a lot of students on campus feel when they protest for Gaza.
Yeah, I feel like one version, like, I'm just looking at how the media has even talking about it today. It's like very disingenuous and flippant. The New York Times was like trying to be like, we know, like, let's break it down for you why these demonstrations are just spreading so rapidly. And they're like calling it like contagious. Like they're like, it's almost like a disease sort of like context that they're trying to set this up as. There are people like in the Free Press, there was an article called Camping Out at Colombia's Communist Coachella. I'm guessing that's not the energy. Like, can you just sort of talk to specifically like what students are experiencing? Because so many people are wanting to be dismissive of what, of how students are organizing on campus and being like, they're just doing it to fit in, man. You know, and there's a lot of peer pressure for young people and they're not, they don't really know what's going on. Is that true?
I think it's very different than it. What was it? A communist Coachella?
Yeah,
camping out at Colombia's communist Coachella. Yes, they had to.
Alliteration is the sign of like a good writer. Probably learned in journalism school, that's probably the right. First thing they teach you. Like sick headlines equal vast alliteration.
Right.
Like, yeah, very credible to add to the alliteration. Completely credible.
Yes.
Yeah, that is not the situation at all. It's been quite well organized, and the students who are leading the protests, many of them are Palestinian and have family and friends and loved ones who have been killed in Gaza. And I think, like, to say that this is just some party at like students who want to feel in on the hot topic of the day is really dismissive to those experiences. And also all the students who kind of feel the pain of their classmates and an ongoing genocide and are showing up to support them.
Yeah. Right. Because because I feel like there's so many other things, like especially for young people entering adulthood, looking at what their lives are going to look like post academia and being like, is this even like a functioning society I'm entering? Like, I feel like there's so many levels of frustration that young people are experiencing, especially on college, that this is just like this swirling perfect storm of many things. But right now, seeing a nonstop, like anyone on social media is having to see just horrific image after horrific image of what's happening in Gaza. And like, I don't understand how some people in the media are like, and yeah, they just think it's like some fad rather than like, no, these people are deeply affected by what is happening. And they're trying to exercise some amount of power over the administration. Cause can you also tell us like what the, you know, the demands of like why is also being the bunch of people are coming in with all kinds of takes, like they're paid actors or they're not, or they just don't know what they're doing or they don't even know what they want. But can you speak to specifically like what the demands are of the students of Colombia in regards to what is happening?
Yeah. So I think like, as you were saying, Miles, what's happening outside the gates is very different than what's happening inside the gates. So when you hear people like yelling violent things, that's probably outside the gates. And those people aren't really in line with the actual demands of the protesters inside the gates, where I've been on campus for the last 2 weeks and it's been very peaceful. It's been students sitting in their tents and like doing their homework and studying for finals. And they're there to demand two main things. One is to disclose Colombia's investments in Israel, and the other is to divest. And Colombia has had several movements for divestment, most notably in South Africa. And so the students are following a similar model for that. And I think the third main call to action is they want the university to give amnesty to students who are arrested by the NYPD. This is over 108 people, I think, were arrested. And those students are being suspended, evicted with very, very little notice, or even expelled. So they want amnesty for those students who are peacefully protesting, literally just sitting on the lawn when the NYPD came and took them away.
So when you talk about Colombia students have pushed for divestment in South Africa, that was during the apartheid period of South Africa in the 80s, and they successfully, you know, they were on the right side of history, and, you know, were able to push Columbia University to do that.
Correct. Yeah. And the most recent development is that the students last night took over Hamilton Hall, which is one of the buildings on campus. And that's the same building that students in decades past have taken over to demand divestment or protest against segregation and all these other big social problems that, looking back on it on the past, it's like, of course, like, of course they were right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and keep talking about this. We'll be right back.
Zach Gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in-line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, you know, I had a bustling retail business, and I need, you know, maybe some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/TDZ, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ. You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
And we're back. And yeah, so I mean, it feels like we're seeing conflicting reports. Like, we're seeing reports that the student protesters are like well-funded sleeper cells, they're committed anti-Semites, and obviously, as you mentioned, like, there is anti-Semitic things being chanted outside of the gates, right? Like, as not a part of the student protests, but anti-Semitism Israel is a real problem, obviously. It's not part of this movement that people want it to be a part of, or that some forces want it to be a part of. But can you just talk a little bit more about kind of what you're hearing from the students who you're talking to and like sitting with? You said they're studying. There's also people in pain who have like lost family members to this conflict. Mm-hmm. What else are you seeing?
Yeah. So on campus, it's like you walk in and on one of the lawns, there's all these like really bright tents, and largely it's like students kind of sleeping there, studying there, reading there on the encampment. At times it's been really a joyful and happy environment. I was speaking to someone of Palestinian heritage who said being on the encampment and getting messages from his loved ones in Palestine and like having that connection being built is one of the safest and like most kind of liberated he's felt in many years. There's been a lot of singing and dancing. There were performances from all the various student dance groups. And there's been like a big Shabbat dinner and celebrations for Passover. There was a moment when for a Shabbat dinner, some of the Jewish students who had been suspended came to the gate, and then the Jewish students who were inside also came to the gate. And of course, the suspended students weren't let in, but they kind of shared their meal and their like their space, even despite the divide. So it's been a lot of just kind of like, yeah, showings of solidarity, showings of joy. And in terms of what people are saying in the beginning, before the NYPD came, it was a group of students who had, I think, were very intensely supporting the pro-Palestine movement. After that, a lot of students who hadn't been that involved came because they were like, no matter what your stance on the issue is, it's not right for a university president to call the NYPD in to arrest its own students, even when the NYPD of all people were like, they're totally peaceful. They're just sitting there.
Seemed pretty cool.
Yeah.
They're like, they were actually pretty chill the first time the NYPD has ever been like.
You want us to knock them for setting up tents? It's like, no, get them. They're violent. They're like, they're playing drums and stuff.
Yeah. And drum beats are violent. Right. We have footloose rules here. People might start dancing, and then who knows what happens.
Then freedom may abound, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So even the NYPD were kind of like, why are we here? Like, why are we doing this? And I think that motivated a lot of students, a lot of professors to come out and like stay in the encampment. And since then, I mean, the media, again, portrays it as this constant chaos and violence and anti-Semitism. And yes, there is a lot of that happening, especially outside of the gates, but largely it's been people just like living life.
Yeah. And I think that's what's kind of, it's so hard, right? Because there's been this, you know, people talk about how anti-Semitism is being weaponized against people who are merely trying to advocate for, you know, the autonomy and safety of Palestinian people. And like, I'm like, what's that experience for you and other students who are like caught in this? Like, you know, like you're morally outraged and you're trying to express that. And next thing you know, you find yourself being like confronted by the NYPD because the administration is calling for that help. Like, does this make students, I mean, obviously the students are very resilient because it doesn't seem like things are diminished in any way. In fact, they're escalating. But like, is the feeling of like optimism, is it outrage mixed with optimism? You know what I mean? Like what's that kind of emotion like for everybody involved? Because yeah, like to your point, it's become the focus of the entire nation now, especially as campuses all over the country are now also having their own encampments and things like that. But what is that feeling in terms of like what the end game is, or like what, how achievable the goals of these encampments are?
I think there is a sense of optimism. It's hard to say that there's any one kind of overarching feeling, yeah, because there's so many different views. And I certainly know students who are very perturbed about the whole situation. There's people who, you know, like graduated during COVID and they really wanted a graduation, and it seems unlikely now that that will happen. And everyone is kind of like running on low sleep and high stress. But I think in terms of the protesters themselves, they see that what they're doing is echoing history. They are optimistic and determined. And from my interviews with protesters, they're like not going to take shit from the university. The university has tried to get them to stop. They came to the encampment with all these forms saying, like, if you leave by 2 p.m. yesterday, so April 29th, then they'll be okay. Otherwise, they'll be suspended and maybe expelled and basically banned from university property. But there was just a vote and it was immediately like, yes, we're staying. So I think that kind of reflects the fact that these students are determined. They are optimistic. And even in the South Africa protests, students occupied buildings for days before the university agreed to divest or agreed to like even think about divesting. So they realize it's not a quick thing.
Right.
They realize it'll take sustained time and effort.
It's like wild to see, because I just can't, like, I just think of my own experience going to college like nearly 20 years ago, or yeah, 20 years ago, it was like my freshman year. And you enter a college campus like there to like explore ideas and to like begin to express yourself in the ways that you're like, and all these things that you're learning by going to college, and like to be in a situation now where that environment has been completely like flipped on its head, and now it's like hostile, and it just is, it's like really fucked up to just see that. And then just to see like this, like to now see the administrations of these, some of these schools just be hand in hand with like militarized police.
Yeah,
it just feels exactly. like a complete fucking just all kinds of fucked up that I'm like, that's, I'm like, God, it must fucking suck so bad for these kids. But at the same time, like they're driven by a higher moral purpose than merely like lamenting the fact that like, what has our school become? But also this is because there's something very real and they're tangible outcomes that they're seeking.
Mm-hmm. Really adds color to this idea that we've heard people talk about, that universities are, you know, hedge fund and real estate companies with like an academic apparatus attached to them. It's like you're seeing that very sharp distinction,
right,
where the hedge fund, you know, $1 billion, you know, endowment people, and you know, the president, who a lot of times, the, you know, Larry Summers was the president of Harvard. Like Larry, right, Summers, the guy who is now just like spokesperson for capitalism and
right,
fuck you to everybody else. But like, it really just kind of puts into perspective like what these institutions actually are, because it's not like the faculty is out there being like, yeah, get the fuck out of here.
No, they're protecting the students.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The learned people. And then the more operational, capitalistic actors are at the top working with military police trying to.
Yeah.
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 And I think that's also reflected in the stuff we learn. So like, we have this thing at Columbia called the core curriculum. So I went there as an undergrad as well. And it's basically all the philosophy and literature that led us to Western society. And in decades past, it's been very, very non-critical. Like there's been no discussions of colonialism or all the things that have gone wrong. And yeah, actually students
protested.
You did put
quotes around Western, by the way. I should just clarify for the listener.
Yeah. That didn't translate to audio.
Yeah.
So, I believe in the 90s, students protested to diversify that whole core curriculum and what we learned. So we added a few scholars who are non-Western, and that's still a work in progress. It's still largely old, dead white men. But we have read some like Edward Said and Gandhi and Franz Fanon. And a lot of students are like, what is the point of discussing all of this in a critical light if we can just sit in our classrooms and like theoretically muse about this using big words, but we can't go out and protest with the ideas that we've learned?
Right.
Yeah. It's funny too, because I've seen Fanon's work be also like weaponized to be like, this guy is just also preaching violence and like not really taking the totality of what Franz Fanon's work is, to just be like, and this is the handbook that these students are operating off of, when I've seen more like fear-mongery type articles that are completely trying to obscure like what's happening. And yeah, it's like, you know, we see this all the time when people really begin to question and threaten the status quo of something, like you get this huge outsized response, because you can see white supremacists have their demonstrations and the police are escorting them.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. because that's just a pillar of what American culture is.
First Amendment.
Yeah, it's First Amendment, man. But then you have kids peacefully protesting, and now we're talking about like just full on goon squads coming out to clear out like these encampments. And it's just, I mean, it's like, it's so wild because at the same time you have these people in leadership. They're like, what's getting into these kids' minds? It's like the shit that they're experiencing on the backs of the policies you create. It's not a mystery. Yeah. It's like they're made to live in the same world, and they have their analysis is just coming online much quicker than generations past who didn't quite have all of this information available to them, like at such speed and efficiency. So yeah,
thanks to TikTok, right, Trisha? I have to assume all the protesters are just on TikTok at all times waiting for their
studying,
next
syndicated
action.
But
it is, I talk a lot about how like movies are an important gauge for like America's like conscious and unconscious biases. And just thinking about like how protesters are treated in a lot of mainstream movies, like especially in like the 90s, and just like thinking of like PCU. Have you guys seen PCU? Yeah, yeah. Like where it just treats, it's like a university where it's like everything's like so politically correct, and like all the protesters are just like people are protesting like what their lunch order is, and so dismissive. But even like in Forrest Gump, like when he goes to the National Mall for like, and like there's a massive protest happening, like they just portray it as like people following along in lines randomly. And like they portray like the Black Panther Party is like, there's this one part where like a Black Panther leader is like shouting at Forrest Gump about like what he's angry about, and Forrest Gump leaves, and the Black Panther leader keeps shouting at the space Forrest Gump left, like he's like a anger automaton.
Right.
And it's just like, there's this mainstream sort of thing that's like, we object to student protesters on the fact that they're annoying to us.
Right.
You know, yeah. Like they just like don't want to hear it. And it's pretty frustrating. And I feel like you see some of that coming out, like where like there's just like this rush of different angles that are critical of the student protest movement. It's like they're, you know, like I was saying, it's like they're organized and like being paid by terrorist organizations. They're actually just doing it for like Instagram. They're actually like doing it so well that it's covering up like some of the real news that's happening. That was one that like I saw recently. There was like a big op-ed in, I think it was the LA Times, where they were like, student protesters, well-meaning, are like distracting from the real crimes that are being committed over there. And but like, so what, they should not protest those crimes?
Yeah.
Because like, isn't that a mainstream media problem, not a student's trying to draw attention to the problem, you know?
Yeah, I feel like there's also like this pettiness from the media, because in a way the students are
doing their
embodying, job. Yeah, they're embodying the outrage even an objective journalist should have. Or not necessarily that you have to editorialize and have outrage within your reporting, but to at least objectively state what is happening, why people are doing it, and like what the actual stakes are, rather than trying to obfuscate and try and be like, well, you know, some people said some really anti-Semitic stuff, so I think all these kids are actually just anti-Semitic. And it's like, are you reporting on the amount of Jewish students that are also participating in these demonstrations? Because that would also put a huge dent in that very, like, you know, the lazy narrative that is used to discredit what's happening. So yeah, I feel like there's this part of it too that, I mean, because in a way I feel it, like, not like this envy, but I'm like, fuck man, I didn't have my shit together like that when I was in college. Like I didn't, like I knew what was wrong with the world, but it just wasn't at that place where it was, there were opportunities to do that all the time. Like aside from like the Iraq war and other demonstrations that I participated in, or like marriage equality and things like that. But in that moment, I'm like, I'm like, damn man, like they're fucking doing the right fucking thing right now for the right reasons. Or, you know, I'd say 95% of the kids are, right? And there's something to that. I feel like, I'm sure on some level the media, like, it forces them to look at themselves too and be like, these kids are looking at how power flows, how hegemony works, how like finances work, how, you know, how US foreign policy puts people in danger, and they're reacting to it in a way that, you know, maybe we spent too much time talking about WMDs and yellow cake and completely fucking missed the whole point. And now you have a group of kids who are like, dude, we're not falling for the same shit anymore.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm I hope that this ends in the way that the students want, and for in a way that is justice oriented and not, you know, just not seeing just more just violence, state sanctioned violence.
Yeah, definitely. I think the protesters themselves have been a little like upset that coverage on them, the fact that all the cameras in the country have turned towards them rather than what's actually happening in Gaza.
Yeah.
But also they feel the need to speak up.
Yeah.
So I guess that's something like we have control over our media diet, so we can also make sure to keep the situation in Gaza.
I think they should just go home. They should just go home. That's the only answer.
So
just
pack it up. Yeah. Just pack it
you're
up.
You're actually making it like I can't even like think right now from your like protesting. Just leave me alone. No, amazing. Well, Trisha, thank you so much for coming back, and hopefully we can stay in touch and kind of keep talking to you as the situation develops. But
yeah. Oh, and also you were going to mention like where you know, for people who are interested in getting an objective understanding of what is happening, like where do we want to direct people to kind of begin their information gathering?
So I think social media is just so poisonous in terms of delivering news about all of this. So I'd say be very wary of that. I found actually one of the best places to go is the student newspapers. So I know like the Columbia Daily Spectator might not be in your normal media diet, but like the Columbia newspaper is doing an amazing job. All of the other student newspapers across campuses are doing really, really good jobs of reporting. And often they're the only ones with access inside campus. So check out those. And then I just wanted to plug a Twitter account that some of my fellow journalism students are running. It's CJS_factcheck. And what they're doing is basically looking at a lot of the news on social media that's being posted. And a lot of those things are like pictures from ages ago or just complete misrepresentations of what's happening. So if you want to see what's true and what's not, check out that Twitter and follow it. And they'll be keeping us updated.
If you are going to go on social media, go to that one.
Yeah.
Because at least that one isn't horrific and full of shit. Yeah,
I get all my sports news from the Columbia student newspaper, so that's already consider me a follower already. Yeah. That's where I get my gambling tips.
Worst sports team, so
amazing.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jack. Thank you, Miles.
Yeah, it was really good seeing you, Trisha.
See you again.
My heart
Stay
goes
safe
out to
there.
You and the other students. And I hope, you know, just more power to all of you, because this is not an easy thing. And this is like one of the biggest societal issues in United States politics that we've just never had a reckoning with. And we're seeing it play out in this way. And I think it's just massively important. So, all credit to everybody being out there and being in solidarity with the Palestinian people.
The kids are all right. After all,
the kids are all right.
Yeah. Those iPad kids, they're all right. They're all right.
Just all right, though. And by all right, we mean like C+. They're all right.
Millennials still fucking rule.
Thank you. We're A+. Amazing. All right. No, that's going to do it for today. Back tomorrow with a whole ass episode of the show. Until then, be kind to each other. Be kind to yourselves. Mm-hmm. Get the vaccine. Yep. Don't do nothing about white supremacy. Yep. And we will talk to y'all tomorrow. Bye.
Bye. Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies, so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at CedarPoint.com.